Hello, my friends. A terrible thing happened over the weekend. Our friend David Menzies went to cover another event. It was actually a pro-Jewish event where some pro-Hamas hate marchers crashed the event. David went to talk to those Hamas hate marchers, and police arrested David. And they took him to jail, and they roughed him up, and they cut his head. It's awful what's going on. I'll show you what happened. And I'll also tell you my thoughts on what's going to happen next. It's essential that you see the video version of this because you have to see it to understand it. To get the video version of this podcast, please go to rebelnewsplus.com, rebelnewsplus.com. It's $8 a month. You get the video version of this show, and you get the satisfaction in knowing that you're helping support Rebel News. We're one of the few media in the country that don't take money from Trudeau. All right, here's today's podcast. Tonight, Toronto police go full authoritarian in their war against David Menzies and Rebel News. It's April 8th, and this is the Ezra Levant Show.
Shame on you, you censorious thug.
What an atrocious weekend in Toronto. It started on Saturday with a protest. There were pro and con, both sides of the Middle East dispute. It's my observation that the same people are at the pro-Gaza side. They're professional activists. They're well-funded. They have buses busing them in. They have professionally made placards in some cases. Some of that money is Canadian public sector unions or other far-left organizations. But it's indubitable that some of that money is foreign money. As you may know, it's been widely reported that Iran has 700 active agents in Canada working to foment anti-Semitism. For years, they worked on the Al-Quds Day, a fake holiday created by Iran. It's basically an anti-Semitic holiday. Here's a tweet from Premier Doug Ford a few years back saying he was against Al-Quds Day and he'd stop it. Yeah, no, he never has. But really, when was the last time he did anything to stop anti-Semitism against Jews, to stop the hate marches outside synagogues? I think Doug Ford's been a disgrace. But the reason I mention Saturday's event is because there are people of goodwill and good faith in this country, including a young man named Salman Seema. We've done shows with him before. He's a young man who is from Iran, as the name suggests, and he was imprisoned and tortured by the Ayatollahs. He's in Canada now, and he's learned the lesson to fight against tyranny. He often goes to anti-Hamas protests, pro-Israel protests, with an Iranian flag, but not the current Iranian flag, one that calls for the Shah of Iran to return. That's when Iran was a pro-Western, more liberal country. Anyway, Salman Seema was the only person attending the Al-Quds Day hate fest. He was attending it in goodwill with a Canadian flag and a placard that said Hamas are terrorists, which happens to be a statement of fact and a statement of law. In Canada, Hamas indeed are a banned terrorist group. So what did the police do? Well, they arrested him and injured him in the process. Take a look.
Just a little space, thank you. Yeah, you can, but you can go over here. Just a little space. Okay, instead of dislocated shoulder, be careful.
I do walk. My shoulder is broken. Is my shoulder broken? Yes.
Is there a medical condition?
Yes. What is it? Dislocated and my shoulder is broken.
Okay, get out of
my
the way.
My shoulder is broken.
I'm gonna go to dry hunger strike.
No, I'm gonna go to dry hunger strike. I said that Hamas is a terrorist organization.
Okay.
Get out of the way.
Hamas is a terrorist organization. Under criminal code of Canada, Hamas is a terrorist organization. I was so peaceful and I had a Canadian flag. Show the Canadian flag. Yeah. Ah. I am gonna go to dry hunger strike.
Okay. Can I get on the air?
Salman, have you ever been arrested before?
No.
Is this your first time?
Yes, it's first time.
Do you have a criminal record?
No.
Do you have a lawyer?
I'm gonna ask.
What happened when
I just said that Hamas is a terrorist organization? I was so peaceful. Still, I wear a Canadian flag, and you can see that.
No armor.
And my shoulder is dislocated, and they are pushing the right shoulder.
Okay. What is this charge, sir? You should announce why you are arresting him.
Absolutely disgraceful. They took him to jail. When they released him, he had to go to the hospital. Just absolutely atrocious what they did to Salman Seema, the one patriotic Canadian there, absolutely nonviolent. But look who the police were completely fine with. Here's a pro-Hamas agitator wearing a terrorist-style bandolier of smoke grenades. It wasn't dynamite to blow himself up, although that's how it looks. But since when do you attend a protest with smoke grenades and police say, yep, no problem here, just absolutely atrocious? Our friend David Menzies covered this on Saturday and went to the hospital to talk to Salman later that night. It was a premonition of exactly what would happen to David the next day. So Saturday was the Iran-sponsored anti-Semitic hate fest in Toronto, where Salman Seema was arrested. Sunday was a pro-Israel Jewish march at City Hall in something called Nathan Phillips Square. That's right outside City Hall. And it was a vigil for the sixth-month anniversary of the massacre in southern Israel committed by Hamas terrorists and the taking of hundreds of hostages, some of whom are still held to this day. So it was sort of funereal in a way. And of course, the foreign-funded Hamas activists crashed that funeral. In a way, they're like the Westboro Baptist Church crashing funerals. Absolutely disgraceful. Take a look at that. And then take a look at when our friend and reporter David Menzies went to interview some of these Hamas activists, just standing there peacefully, just asking questions with its microphone. And you guessed it, the police roughed him up, arrested him, handcuffed him, threw him in the back of a truck, and jailed him, just like they did to Salman Seema the day before, and just like they did to David a couple of weeks ago. Take a look at this disgusting display.
Watch your hands. We have your hands. Watch your hands. Watch your hands. Don't put your hands on me.
They can chant genocide in the street, and I can't cover that. Obey your oath, officer. Obey your oath.
Will
you get, listen, if I'm on the other arrest, get your hands off.
Okay, then I'll put your phone down. Put your hands behind your back. Put your hands behind your back. You're under arrest for refusing to leave, okay? Refusing to the wagon, Mr. Menzies.
Good boy. Efren, are you catching this?
Yeah.
Once again,
You can have full
chance genocide in the streets of our democracy.
You're under arrest for refusing to leave premises.
It's a public place. This is literally the public square. This is literally.
I've asked you numerous times. I try to be as nice as possible. Right?
You can
trespass authority.
You can have. They assaulted me and you did nothing.
Thank you.
They assaulted me and you did nothing.
We gotta keep this clear. Thank you.
Why are you stealing my stuff?
Thank you.
Why are you?
Are you catching this?
Yeah.
Okay, now they've taken my phone and they've taken my hat.
He's got your phone box.
And yet, you can chant genocide on this street. And you can wear fake suicide masks. And that's okay.
Thank you, David Menzies.
Did you catch what they charged him with? Trespass. I'm a bit of an expert in the Trespass Act, and we teach our journalists about the Trespass Act all the time. We teach them two things about it, which is when you're on private property, which, by the way, includes private property to which the public is invited to attend, like a shopping mall. You have public access to it, but it's a private property. When you're in private property, someone's house, someone's restaurant, a mall, if someone on behalf of the owner or a tenant, someone lawfully says, get out, for any reason or no reason, you have the obligation to get out right away. That's the same across the country. And in fact, whoever is in control of the premises can pretty much escort you out using reasonable force. They can't be unreasonable about it. The moment someone says, get out of private property, you got to start getting out. You don't have to run, but you have to move with some alacrity. That's private property. And of course, we make sure our journalists understand that. But there's different rules when it comes to public property, like Nathan Phillips Square in front of a city hall, like a sidewalk. Do the police have a right to trespass you, to order you to leave a public sidewalk or a public park or the public plaza outside city hall, especially when there is a official event going on there to which David was invited? The answer is only in certain cases. And I know this because you might recall a few years ago, that same Nathan Phillips Square right in front of City Hall was the site of an Antifa-led shantytown. They set up these tents, which was against many laws, by the way, and they stayed there for weeks. And when Rebel News went to do journalism there, the police kicked us out. We studied the law and went back with a lawyer in tow. And we knew the law that unless we were doing one of a short list of banned things, like getting into fights or playing very loud music or getting drunk, you cannot simply be shooed off of public land just because a politician or a cop doesn't like you. Here's a reminder of how that went. Here's me sort of negotiating with a cop a few years ago. We had a lawyer in tow, and we were freshly briefed in the law of the Trespass Act as it applies to public parks, and in particular to that plaza. Just take a look for your reminder.
Give us space.
Don't f***ing talk to me.
Give us space.
I'm in a public square, Mike.
Come on, let's go. Let's go.
Come on,
I didn't do enough for you.
What the hell?
I swear to God,
don't
touch
my guy.
Come on, man.
We will not stoop to your violence, you f***ing demons.
We've been separated from some members of our team. It is completely lawless here. There's some police right there. Let's see if I flag them over, they do anything. Hey, police, look at this. I guess they have to enforce the Bay Street clear lane or something. The cops are running away from the crime.
We came here today with seven private professional insured security so we could do journalism. We briefed ourselves on various laws and we were compliant throughout. We went through the law, no swearing, no troublemaking. And we simply stood in there to report. And our security did their best, but they were overwhelmed and there was a fisticuff. I'd like to go back and calmly stand in the town square and do a 5-minute news report. But I was driven out despite spending thousands of dollars on private security. Now that you guys are here, I wonder if I can walk back into the town square of my city peacefully in compliance with all laws and exercise my right as a journalist.
All right, you don't have to put that in my face. So, we were talking to the security over there, right? And they were saying that some of the words you guys were saying and using were antagonizing the crowd there. And
it's not
it was
true. What word? I didn't even talk to them.
Did you say anything to them?
I didn't say not a word.
Yeah. So when that police officer said to David Menzies, "You are being arrested because you did not leave the premises," David Menzies didn't have to leave the premises just because some cop said so, or just because some Hamas protester didn't like him. David did nothing wrong. He didn't violate any law, certainly not the Trespass Act. However, those Hamas activists who physically punched and shoved him and knocked the microphone out of his hand, well, they did not only break the Trespass Act for public places, but they broke other parts of the criminal code too. The police didn't arrest them. The police arrested David. And here's my interview with him when he finally got out of jail some 3 hours later. And look what the police did to his head.
It's coming up on sunset. I'm standing outside Division 52 police station. They've let David Menzies go, but he has to go back to court. They have made several criminal charges against him. One of them, the most insane of them, is under the Trespass Act. They said he was trespassed from the public property in front of City Hall. I know a little something about that, and this charge is completely bogus. David, first of all, how are you doing? And I notice you have a cut.
Oh yeah, here. Yeah.
A cut on your head. Did they rough you up?
You know, maybe this was on me. I didn't duck in time to hit the roof of the paddy wagon, but for some reason, they while I was handcuffed, one of the officers, I don't know which one, Ezra, was pressuring my shoulder and my arms. And I've been going, as you know, for a few months for physiotherapy here. And it's really, I'm wondering if all that therapy has been undone by that. I literally yelped, right? And I wasn't being a drama queen. It is crazy, Ezra, because there was, what, maybe 2,000 people on the square today. There was the predominance of the people were for the Mr. Polyev's speech to the pro-Israel people. And there was a small pro-Hamas demonstration. And I'm thinking, out of all these people, literally in the public square, a journalist doing public service journalism, just asking questions. And by the way, an Efren can account for this. I mean, I haven't even seen the footage, but I can tell you, we were getting physically assaulted by the pro-Hamas people.
That's absolutely outrageous. They had no basis to arrest him, no basis to detain him, no basis to handcuff him, no basis to assault him. And when you are arrested, by the way, and you must do exactly what the police say, otherwise you're resisting arrest, when you are in police custody, your safety is now subject to the duty of care of the cops. That is, they have to take care of you because you can't take care of yourself. You can't choose where you go. You can't choose what you do. Your belongings and possessions are given up. You are like a baby in the arms of the police. And so when they put David in the back of the police truck and slammed his head on the roof, and when they handcuffed him and made it very painful for his shoulders, that's on them. And don't think that someone gets their head smashed into a police vehicle without the absolute determination by the police that that's what they're going to do to him. This is the third time this has happened in 2024. The first time, you'll recall, was when David Menzies had the temerity to ask Chrystia Freeland a question. Remember this? And look at the police lie about it.
Ms. Freeland, how come the IRGC is not a terrorist group? Why is your government supporting Islamo-Nationalism? What? You've been missing. What are you doing?
You're under arrest for assault.
What, sir?
Why are you pushing me? You're under arrest for assault.
Who are you?
You're under arrest for assault.
What are you talking about? Police, you're under arrest.
How am I under arrest? You bumped into me.
You pushed into me.
You bumped. I was just scrubbing. I got my credentials here, and you just bumped into me. So excuse
police,
me.
Police, you're under arrest.
What is your name and your badge? What is your name and your badge?
You've been told you're under arrest.
Why am I under arrest?
Come on over here. We've got a couple officers.
He blocked my way. What? I was just scrumming Chrystia Freeland.
I'm a police officer. You're under arrest.
What is your name and your badge?
I'm assaulting a police officer.
Well, they're just getting warmed up. Then this is a couple of weeks ago when they did this to David. Absolutely outrageous. They kept him out in jail till past midnight.
They're about to pray. They're about to pray.
We're trying to put him behind the
gate. Hey, that's my guy. Hey, that's my guy.
Stop.
Hey. Take care of the dude.
Stay back, guys. Stay back. Hey, stay back. Stay back. Stop pushing forward.
And then the latest incident yesterday, three times in a row. In the first case, it was the RCMP and York Regional Police. In the next two times, it was the Toronto Police Service. Do you doubt for a second that they're targeting David Menzies? And why would they be targeting him? David has never threatened anyone in his life. He's never gotten physical with anyone in his life. But in both cases of Chrystia Freeland and covering these Hamas hate marches, he's offending the political regime. He was embarrassing Chrystia Freeland by asking a question about radical Islam. So the cops came in and smacked him. And when he's with the Jews, as he was yesterday, or covering the Hamas activists, as he was on Saturday, that's upsetting Justin Trudeau's voter base. And so the police come in, swoop in, and take him away. Not only are they doing Justin Trudeau's bidding, but they're making a calculation. Here's dozens or hundreds of foreign-funded, wild-eyed, in some case masked Hamas mobs who clearly are engaging in violence versus one guy, David Menzies. Well, who's going to be easier to throw in the back of a police van? In that way, the police are cowards. They'll arrest a peaceful journalist, peacefully practicing journalism under his freedom of the press guaranteed by the Charter of Rights, and they won't touch the actual violent people because that's too much hassle, and they'll get in trouble with Justin Trudeau. By the way, you might remember a couple of months ago, Justin Trudeau had a private meeting with the Toronto police chief. That's not his business. The Toronto police chief does not answer to Justin Trudeau. Who else would be able to command a meeting with the police chief and instruct him on what to do, contrary to whatever the wishes of the police commission were? What did Justin Trudeau tell the police chief? And is it related to the fact that the police absolutely allow the Hamas protesters to do whatever they want and to arrest any Jew or journalist that's against them? Absolutely disgraceful. It's a terrible thing, and I'm going to talk more about it. But first, let me show you, I guess, a positive highlight from yesterday. Here's an excerpt of a speech given by Pierre Poilievre to the assembled people there. Unfortunately, David was not there to cover it because he was in jail. Take a look at part of Pierre Poilievre's speech, And think of what a difference he is from Justin Trudeau.
Shalom.
Shalom.
Bring it home.
Let my people go.
Yeah.
It is an honor to stand with you here today. Friends of humanity, Jews, Gentiles, people of all backgrounds, Canadians, all people of decency, to stand against the homicidal, genocidal death cult that is Hamas, a death cult that must be destroyed so that we can free the hostages and restore peace for all. I'm joined by the great common sense conservative candidate Roman Baber, who is on the stage today. A proud Jew and a strong voice for his community and for all communities. 6 months ago, plus one day, on October 6th, what did we have? We had a ceasefire. What did we have? Hamas was governing in Gaza. Israel was not even in Gaza. Israel had withdrawn its population and its forces from the Gaza territory. And Gaza was ruled over by the iron fist of Hamas in remote control by the tyrants of Tehran, the dictators in Iran who've been supplying Hamas with its weaponry, its logistics and intelligence. And Israel had kept its borders relatively soft so that Palestinians could even cross the border and work on the Israel side, bringing home a living for their family. And in this atmosphere, where there was a ceasefire, where Gaza was not controlled in any way, shape, or form by Israel, an unprovoked attack was unleashed on October 7th, designed to commit the maximum human and civilian devastation in acts of cruelty that cannot even be spoken from this stage, with sadistic delight by those who undertook them. The Israeli government and the Israeli people had not only the right, but the obligation to defend themselves and to fight back and lead to the destruction of Hamas. And here we stand, 6 months later. Families continue to be tormented by the loss or captivity of their loved ones. Many have already been killed. The biggest attack on the Jewish people since the Shoah. And may all those that have been lost, may their memories be a blessing to us all. May they not have died in vain. May we have the courage to stand with them abroad.
What a difference between that and between Justin Trudeau. But the thing is, Justin Trudeau has done the math. I don't think Justin Trudeau particularly likes the Jews, even though his chief fundraiser is naturally Jewish. I think Justin Trudeau is just good at math. He's counted noses. He's checked the votes. There's about 350,000 Jews in Canada, and there's about 2 million Muslims in Canada. I don't have the latest stats for Canadian Muslims, but the Henry Jackson Society just published a poll of British Muslims, and I can imagine it's quite similar. Only one in four British Muslims believes that Hamas committed murder and rape in Israel on October 7th. Only one in four British Muslims says Israel has a right to exist as a Jewish homeland. Almost half of British Muslims, 46%, feel more sympathy with Hamas than with Israel, with only 3% saying Israel. Just incredible. They support the terrorist groups. They say Jews are too powerful. They say, you know, it's just an incredible poll. I won't go through the entire thing. It's illiberal in every way. It's the kind of results you would see if you did a poll in Pakistan or Bangladesh or Afghanistan. And how could it not be? When you bring in hundreds of thousands or millions of people from Pakistan, Bangladesh, places like that, and you don't integrate them, assimilate them, acculturate them to Western liberal values, why are you surprised when they carry with them Pakistani values and Afghan values and Iraqi values? Those are places with endemic anti-Semitism. Even though there's no Jews in Pakistan or Afghanistan, I mean, literally zero. They hate Jews as a religious belief or as a political ideology. That doesn't change just because they get on a quick flight to London Heathrow or to Toronto, Canada. But let me tell you what's going on the streets of Canada. I've been thinking about it a lot. I mentioned it the other day, something called broken windows theory. And let me show you an example of what I'm obviously referring to. Look at this. It's an incredible building. That's actually a building under the National Register of Historic Places. That's in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. That's an interesting old building, the kind of thing that would either be refurbished and turned into really cool shops or maybe a loft condominium. But every single window on it is broken. Do you think every single window of it was broken on one day? I don't think so. I think it was fine until one window was broken. And when it wasn't fixed, then another was broken. And when it wasn't fixed, then another and another. And then it probably became a game. Let's break the unbroken windows and then let's go in. I'm surprised the place hasn't been torched. I think that building is the symbol of what James Q. Wilson, the economist, calls broken windows theory or broken windows policing. And I talked about this, I think it was on the live stream the other day, but permit me a moment here. It's about social norms and conformity in a good way. We talk a lot on Rebel News about not conforming, but that's non-conformity to authoritarianism, to forced jabs, to ways of thinking that are not free. There are certain things where social norms and conformity are good, like self-control and not smashing windows or graffitiing. Broken windows theory is about the loss of social norms and positive conformity. It's about a lack of routine monitoring. As in, people say, oh, I can tell that no one really watches here, that I'm sort of alone with my dark imagination. When you see a building with broken windows like that, you realize that there's no conformity, and so you don't have to conform. You know that no one's watching, and if they watch, they don't care. And then finally, it signals that this is a high crime area, and that's just how it is, and that's the culture you got to fit into. That broken windows theory is happening in Canada. It's happening across America, obviously. And I think it's a way, it's connected in a way to Canada's insane home invasion crime wave, which is happening at the same time. It's happening in Toronto. It's happening in Vancouver and other cities. Gangs target high-value SUVs, fancy cars. They go to the house. They break into the house for the purpose of getting the key fob, and they either drive away or copy the key fob and steal extremely expensive cars. This is happening several times a day in Toronto. It's absolutely terrifying, these home invasion crimes. And I believe it's part of the broken windows theory, is that people say, oh, there's no social norm against crime anymore. There's no conformity that we want a high trust, high safety society. No one is monitoring. And if they do, they don't care. And by the way, this is just what we have to live with now. I want to read to you an excerpt from a study. Now, I took this text from Wikipedia. It's actually from a larger study, but I think it's so eloquently written. Will you permit me to read it to you? And I want to tell you the difference between broken windows theory and what's going on in Toronto. I'll tell you the similarities, but I'm going to read this to you and I'm going to tell you the difference. So this is from a study on broken windows theory about 20 years old. In an anonymous urban environment with few or no other people around, social norms and monitoring are not clearly known. Thus, individuals look for signals within the environment as to the social norms in the setting and the risk of getting caught violating those norms. One of the signals is the area's general appearance. Under the broken windows theory, an ordered and clean environment, one that is maintained, sends the signal that the area is monitored and that criminal behavior is not tolerated. Conversely, a disordered environment, one that is not maintained, broken windows, graffiti, excessive litter, sends a signal that the area is not monitored and that the criminal behavior has little risk of detection. The theory assumes that the landscape communicates to people. A broken window transmits to criminals the message that a community displays a lack of informal social control and so is unable or unwilling to defend itself against a criminal invasion. It is not so much the actual broken window that is important, but the message the broken window sends to people. It symbolizes the community's defenselessness and vulnerability and represents a lack of cohesiveness of the people within. Neighborhoods with a strong sense of cohesion fix broken windows and assert social responsibility on themselves, effectively giving themselves control over their space. I'm almost done. Let me finish it. I just think every word here is gorgeous, better than I could write. The theory emphasizes the built environment, but must also consider human behavior. Under the impression that a broken window left unfixed leads to more serious problems, residents begin to change the way they see their community. In an attempt to stay safe, a cohesive community starts to fall apart. As individuals start to spend less time in communal space to avoid potential violent attacks by strangers, the slow deterioration of a community as a result of broken windows modifies the way people behave when it comes to their communal space, which in turn breaks down community control. It's a spiral. As rowdy teenagers, panhandlers, addicts, and prostitutes make their way into a community, it signifies that the community cannot assert informal social control, and citizens become afraid that worse things will happen. As a result, they spend less time in the streets to avoid these subjects and feel less and less connected from their community if the problems persist. Okay, I'm going to stop there. But I thought that was exactly right. But understand the difference between mere broken windows theory and what's going on in Toronto and what's going on with these Gaza marches. Broken windows theory is about physical objects. It's about the physical environment communicating messages in an anonymous place, like at night, which is true. Like, that broken window tells you no one cares. It's not that people have to say, I don't care. It's a broken window. You're intuiting it. But what about when everyone is there to watch? When you're not throwing a rock anonymously, when you're not scurrying in the dark doing graffiti, what about when everyone is there to watch you break the law? The police, the media, politicians. I mean, seriously, Pierre Poilievre himself and other MPs were right there. And none of the Hamas people were arrested. They're chanting for genocide of the Jews. They're calling for violence. That's what an intifada is. They're wearing smoke grenades. They're punching. You saw them punching and shoving David and knocking the microphone out of his hand. So broken windows theory says when people get the vibe that you can commit minor crimes, they will, and the crimes will slowly get worse and worse, and people will slowly recede from the public square. But it's all happening because you're interpreting the physical environment, broken windows, graffiti, litter. But imagine how quickly things unravel. Imagine how quickly people feel unsafe if you're doing this in broad daylight and not in some alley. You're doing this right in front of City Hall. And not just in front of City Hall. There's 100 police around. There's the leader of the opposition there. There's various MPs. And you're breaking the law and you're calling for death to the Jews and you're hitting reporters and you're doing insane things, much worse than just a broken window or litter or graffiti. And you're doing it in the plain sight of the police, and they're fine with it. In fact, they arrest the one guy who's shining a light on it. Broken windows theory, which is exactly how Rudy Giuliani got New York back on track. They started to crack down on jaywalking. They cracked down on graffiti. They cracked down on turnstile jumping in the subway. They went after the little things to send the message, we're not allowing our society to unravel anymore. And it got safer and safer and safer and safer. And that took 10 years to do. Now it's unraveled. But broken windows theory is about the physical environment. But when the human environment, when the people who are supposed to be watching, when the police who are supposed to be policing, when the reporters who are supposed to be reporting, when they're all watching these Hamas insane foreign activists commit their crimes with impunity, they are learning the lessons not over the course of months or years, they're learning the lessons over the course of weeks. And what lesson have they learned? They have learned they can get away with a lot more than just graffiti or broken windows or litter. They have learned that they are the new bosses. And it's terrible. If you want to help us fight back, we've lawyered up. We're going to do our best. Go to standwithdavid.com. Stay with us. More ahead.
David Menzies for Rebel News here in downtown Toronto. And folks, I'm standing outside St. Michael's Hospital. And the reason for that is that my guest, Salman Seema, had to be rushed here earlier tonight. You see, Mr. Seema was out on University Avenue doing a counter demonstration to the pro-Hamas hate fest. This time it was the Al-Quds rally where the hateful rhetoric was being spewed. And you might be saying, which pro-Hamas supporter injured Salman Seema? Oh, but you're jumping to conclusions. It was the police that roughed him up that required Salman to come here and get treatment. Salman, I saw the video myself. I couldn't tell you were doing anything wrong. What the heck happened several hours ago just west of here?
So it was a hate festival, Al-Quds Day rally, which is backed by the Islamic regime in Iran. Clear sample of foreign interference in our country, in Canada. So I was standing in the sidewalk peacefully, and my sign was Hamas is a terrorist organization. We had a Canadian flag, and the other friends, they had a sign that IRGC is a terrorist organization. The other friends, they had a sign that rape is not resistance. But guess what? Canadian flag offended Toronto police.
So you've got this sign, you're doing a demonstration, you're vastly outnumbered by the pro-Hamas hooligans. Then what happens? What do police do or say to you?
Several times police officers tried to violate our Charter of Rights and Freedom. And they said that you cannot stay here, you cannot stay here. I said that no, as long as I am peaceful, I can stay here. Then a police officer said that, we are here to protect both sides. Then I said that, thank you, police officer, you are here to protect those jihadi anti-Semitic mob. Then it was a very peaceful conversation, and there is a video of that. They said that you are arrested for breaching of the peace, something like that. It was 100% peaceful. I didn't touch anyone. Everything was peaceful. We had just a sign and Canadian flag, lion and sun flag, the real flag of Iran. And
So Salman, just to be clear though, they did indeed put you under arrest for breach of the peace.
Yes.
But wait a minute. I know, as per usual, there were chants for genocide during this Al-Quds march, Intifada, from the river to the sea, and so on. How were you breaching the peace?
Exactly. It was an irony. Exactly at the same moment that the officers tried to arrest me, they were chanting for Intifada, Intifada. Intifada means that violence attack to the Jews, not just in Israel, in all over the places. So
I got to tell you, Salma, in the Department of Misery Loves Company, I know exactly where you're coming from with the Toronto Police. Folks, do you remember what happened last March when I was covering a pro-Hamas rally trying to shut down a Justin Trudeau fundraiser? Well, I got arrested because the police thought that I might ask questions that might incite the pro-Hamas hooligans. Here, check it out.
Guys, excuse me, we're trying to put him behind the
Hey, that's my guy. That's my guy.
Stop.
So there you go, Salman. You know, there's a movie, Minority Report, set in the future. It's about a pre-crimes unit. They arrest you if they think you're going to commit a crime. That's what happened to me in Toronto of 2024. But again, what happened to you? And this isn't the first time you've been roughed up. I believe going back to December 23rd of last year, once again, you had that egregious offensive Canadian flag. And here is how Salman was treated by the mob.
Yeah, they are attacking Salman Seema, grabbing the Iranian flag.
Stop.
by the way, Solomon, when they roughed you up like that, stole your flag, any charges to any of those people?
No charges to any of those people. And unfortunately, I lost my freedom once in Iran by the Ayatollahs, by the dictatorship, by the IRGC. And Justin Trudeau is warming up the car, and I can see the unity of red and green alliance, and I can see that how Toronto police violated my Charter of Rights and Freedom. And Toronto police, they told me that, we are doing it for your safety. I said that I don't exchange my freedom for safety.
And that's perversely ironic, because when the police roughed you up, that's what resulted in you having to go to hospital. Did you tell them that you had a previous shoulder injury from December? Did they, you know, modify their behavior at all?
I said it, and I was in a pain, and I was screaming that, oh, my shoulder. The other friends, they know that my shoulder was dislocated. And even a police officer, because it's a dislocated shoulder, you cannot twist it how much or how long you want it, but they did it, and they didn't care.
So they knew about the injury, and they still manhandled you that way. That is absolutely egregious and outrageous, Solomon. You know, what we've seen, I think, Solomon, in the last 6 months, since the October massacre in Israel, is law enforcement here, they're not enforcing the law. They are so-called keeping the peace. And keeping the peace, to me, it looks like they are just turning a blind eye, whether it's chants of genocide, whether it's vandalism, whether it's firebombing Jewish businesses and restaurants, whether it's physical assault. It's like might makes right, you know, going after the people in the pro-Hamas camp. That's too much trouble. But one lone guy like you, that's easy peasy. That's not law enforcement. That's bending the knee to the bullies.
Thanks God I was not alone. We have a few the other freedom fighters and some political prisoner from Iran, former political prisoner from Iran. They were supporting me. We were together. And even Toronto police, they don't keep the peace.
We have incidents where the police were giving the pro-Hamas types free coffee and Timbits. I guess it can get kind of cold when you're out on a bridge all day spewing hatred in the middle of a Canadian winter. It's absolutely unbelievable. Solomon, in terms of how you feel mentally, because this is not the first time you've been attacked, has this crushed your spirits, or are you going to continue fighting for freedom?
You know that the moment that they sent me to the cell, it was a two-step interior cell. It was a very small cell. It reminds my memory from my torture in Iran in Evin prison when I was arrested and tortured by IRGC. And I said that, okay, you for once fight for freedom and peace in Iran, still the fight is continuing.
You know, it's amazing. I mean, I live in a city with a huge Persian minority, Richmond Hill. And, you know, so many Persians tell me that the reason they left Iran was to get away from this tyrannical nonsense. And they are kind of shocked to see it come across the ocean onto our Canadian shores. Do you feel that way yourself sometimes?
Unfortunately, yes. Unfortunately, yes. And I came here as a refugee. I took refuge in beautiful Canada. In 2011, when I came to Canada, Canada was not like this.
Absolutely. Well, Solomon, I want to thank you so much for making time. And here's, I think, how I'm going to conclude this. Toronto Police Chief Myron Demku, it's time for you to go. It's time for you to resign after the atrocious way the police have been conducting themselves these last 6 months. I would argue that you are the worst police chief in the city of Toronto's history. And considering that bee-bumbling Bill Blair, the Justin Trudeau fart catcher in Ottawa, used to be a chief of police, that's saying something. Do the right thing. Resign. For Rebel News, I'm David the Menzoid Menzies.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back. Your viewer mail to me. Jason Briscoe says, thanks for covering my story, Ezra. If I'm not mistaken, that's the cop who donated $50 of his own money when he was on leave from being a cop anyways, $50 to the truckers, and he was docked a bunch of pay, and he was prosecuted and denounced because someone said that the truckers were an illegal protest. That's not a thing. They were a completely legal protest. Some individual people may have gotten parking tickets, but it was never deemed by any judicial authority an illegal protest. Very interesting case. I'm glad the Justice Center for Constitutional Freedoms is taking the case, and I sure hope he gets some justice. Saskatchewan Dave says, halfway through this interview, I kept saying to myself, how is any of this legit if the names were gotten illegally? Then right at the end, Ezra brings this up. Good work. Sue the, there's some sort of swear out of all of them. Anyone involved should be fired immediately. Yeah, you know what's crazy is that hacker boasted that he illegally stole those names and posted them online. That was clearly done at the behest of the government of Canada since he was bragging about it with obvious impunity. But the police used literally stolen private data to go after a cop. What does that show you about the rule of law in Canada? That's our show for the day. Until tomorrow, on behalf of all of us here at Rebel World Headquarters, to you at home, good night, and keep fighting for freedom.